Hi, this is Zero, and you're listening to A Dark Companion. I'm starting this episode a little bit differently this time, with me talking instead of my guest doing an intro. This is a special episode and a big surprise for everybody out there. So, guest, could you introduce yourself?
Hey, Zero. Hello, everybody. It's Neil Edelstein, director and producer of Haunting Melissa and its sequel, Dark Hearts. Very fired up to be here with you today, Zero.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for agreeing to do the podcast. I'm glad I could kind of throw my hat in the ring of helping Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts really get out there and get people interested and excited about it.
Well, we here at Hook Digital Media, we've been kind of waiting for someone to grab a hold of the podcast reins, and you've done a great job. We've been super impressed and avidly listening here in the office and kind of spreading the word. It's been really fun to see just the expansion of the world beyond just consuming the app and watching the content, just to see people engage with it and have conversations that are just, they're fun to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I got the idea for it from the first Haunting Melissa and talking to the people on Twitter, and then getting into Dark Hearts and how just rabid we all were, sending information back and forth and getting on the discussion boards and talking a lot. And I was just like, you know, especially on Twitter, the conversation's kind of isolated to all that, you know, the people that know each other. And so I was like, why, you know, how can we get this to everybody? And I'd kind of played around with podcasting in the past, and it just seemed like a great idea. And I did a search and nobody had done one. And I was like, ground floor, I might as well jump on it. I'm really happy about how this movie, this app, however you want to call it, is started to, it's inspired a lot of people to do things that that are creative.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, and that's kind of you hope that happens, because it's the tools for creating now are so readily available, especially on the filmmaking side of things, but with the explosion of personal computers and the iPad and the iPhone and the apps, it's just, I think everybody's creative. It's just, you get the ability to exercise that creativity, and making these apps and telling these stories, one of our primary goals is obviously inspiring people to do the same in kind, because the distribution model that we created is much easier to achieve than having to make a movie or a television show and go through the traditional routes to get your content to an audience. So it's great to hear that people are inspired, and encourage everybody to get out there. And you know, if you're passionate about anything in the arts, you know, now's the opportunity more than ever to do something. So I hope that's in our DNA as a concept, Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts, and as a company.
It certainly seems that way. It brings people together with social networking. Like, I wouldn't have met all the people on Twitter that I have, and you know, it allows you to communicate with them, see the kind of things they do, and everybody feeds off each other. And also, we feed off that app, and there's so much in the story and in the way that you guys filmed it that it really engages your mind to focus. Like, I watch all movies now differently than I ever did. I will stop a movie and rewind it and go back and look for things that are mentioned. You know, I'm much more in tune with the storytelling and the details of things now, thanks to Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts.
That's super cool. Yeah, and to be able to hunt for those clues, whether they're there or not, or explore ideas or see if things change, that's been, I'm always a fan of those types of movies and kind of searching through films, and obviously the DVD era gave us that ability, but I think this new era, having film content on mobile devices, is really a new world to explore, and then to be able to try to create with that in mind, which is, I hope, what we did with the apps, is it's been a super fun thing to do, but also incredibly challenging on top of trying to make a movie. But to try to appease that extra layer of intrigue, it's always another kind of master that you have to serve and you don't want to forget about.
Sure. I mean, when I first got Haunting Melissa, and I've been trying ever since I started this podcast to remember how I first heard about it. I think it must have been in the top lists for apps, and I found out, you know, I didn't really get how it worked, and I looked at the interface while I was playing the video, and I thought I saw something, and I saw those arrows on the side, and I could click back frame by frame, and then I realized there's stuff in here you need to find, and it reminded me of the show Fringe, where there's all kinds of things hidden in there. Each episode has something in it that hints at the next, and you know, that kind of thing. And that's really the stuff I like. So I was just so excited that there was something that is absolutely just feels like it's made for me. It also shows. Go ahead.
No, finish.
Oh, it's just that it. I like that because it also shows that the people that are making the movie or the TV show are really. It's an added level of seriousness. Like, they're really into it, and they have taken a lot of care versus just getting a story and then filming the story, and that's kind of it. There's more involved.
Yeah, and usually I would suspect they're fans of that as well, you know, as I am, you know, that trying to dig around for a deeper meaning. I think when I was a teenager, I used to explore even, you know, albums, DVD covers, looking for those kind of hidden clues that were, like, were the songs tied to the album covers or things buried in the album cover? You know, like, were there, you know, was that layer there? And sometimes I think it was, and sometimes you would create, you know, your own kind of interpretation of what was happening on an album cover or inside the album jacket or in the music. And, you know, it's always fun to be able to extend that into the moving picture realm. But, you know, those arrows that you speak about, those back and forth arrows that we evolved into in HM1 were, you know, something that wasn't initially there. I mean, that's part of the fun of this application building world, is that you get a chance to make changes or improve upon things in real time or realize how you've been missing the obvious, you know? So I think those arrows didn't come in, the back and forth step arrows didn't come in till much later in the game. Maybe the redesign at Halloween in 2013. And it was like this obvious thing sitting right in front of us, and we had never initially thought about it or put it in. So it's kind of part of the fun of it. Keeps you on your toes, you know, like, what can we do to make this experience better?
Yeah, and it's great because this is a completely new concept, so you know, you're learning things as you go along, and some of the stuff is obvious once you figure it out, and so it really gives you a chance to refine it, and that's why me and probably, and I'm sure everybody, all the fans of Haunting Melissa, were really excited for the sequel with Dark Hearts, because you know, there's so much had happened, and you guys had gone through so much with the first one. Now, taking what you've learned and applying it again to the next part of the movie.
Yeah. It, you know, very fortunate to be able to get to the sequel. You know, it's on the filmmaking front alone, it was just a great opportunity to kind of ramp up and I think bring a more robust experience. Certainly, you know, Haunting Melissa 1 has found footage and the sequel is not. So, there's right there, there's just a drastic contrast, which I think is kind of fun, you know. Yeah. It gives it its kind of inherent evolution in terms of its style, the way it looks and the way it behaves as a film. As a filmmaker, personally speaking, it was a fantastic challenge to be able to, you know, do a found footage piece first and then evolve it into really more of a traditional filmmaking experience.
Yeah, because, you know, the found footage concept, which is getting done a lot more and more nowadays, the fact that you had found footage at first and then not in the second one really makes the whole world of Haunting Melissa much bigger. Because it's like there's this background thing that was going on as well as this whole other aspect of it. I really liked the fact that you did it both ways.
Yeah. And it I think the initial idea of Haunting Melissa came to me, and it was always a small I wanted to feel like a homespun, small, real world look into this girl's life, and I don't feel like I achieved that ultimately, because I kind of changed my approach to some of the filmmaking. It's still found footage, but it's not at the level where it's so down and dirty that it literally feels like it popped out of somebody's, you know, iPhone or right. high-end camera. I still wanted there to be that kind of, a little bit of that, I don't know if it's magical realism, but that feeling of taking an audience away a little bit from the world they know, so you can kind of inject some creepy weirdness into it without trying to be a slave to keeping it so purely, this is really, you know, footage from this girl's iPhone.
Right.
And so I think the most important thing is, are you emotionally engaging the audience? Are they emotionally sucked into what story you're telling? And found footage can certainly achieve those parameters, but you loosen it up, the found footage, a little bit, and I think you can suck people in even further without having to continually, you know, make sure that this is as raw and real as possible. And I think the found footage experience is kind of, I don't know if it's run its course, but it just feels like it can be a bit of a trap. And I think we got out of that in the first one, where we still were found footage, but also, again, we kind of like brought this, you know, otherworldly vibe to it that could take the audience away. And I think it may have eased the transition from that app or that story, that filmmaking, into the sequel, which is really, I think, on a level of any movie that a studio would make in terms of its look and feel and sound. And, you know, the approach to the filmmaking was the same approach I would take if I was making a movie at Warner Brothers or Paramount or Fox, and that you're making a movie, and you need to make all parts of filmmaking work at the highest level: picture, sound, performance, the score, your color grade, all those elements came into play and had for me to work at the highest level. Whereas the first one, there wasn't really a score. And of course you want the best performance, but like the color grade was different, having to make things look more found footagey. Some effects were involved in that regard too. So you're kind of like trying to downgrade a look. So yeah, an interesting, I think, jump from the first app to the second one, just on the filmmaking side, in terms of the look and feel, the contrast between the two is I think extreme and good in that way.
Yeah, Haunting Melissa definitely, it felt to me more like more than found footage. I mean, there were certainly parts where it's clearly, you know, she's filming herself and she's carrying the camera and that kind of thing, but there were other moments where the perspective of the camera really seemed to be more, we're looking through the eyes of something that's there with her. Where, you know, found footage movies are generally, it's all just shots from all the cameras everybody's carrying. So it actually, to me, it added another creepy level to it of, like, we're spying on her, not so much we're seeing what she filmed.
Yeah, well, that's good, because that was the intent.
Excellent. I actually had a question about the idea for Haunting Melissa and this whole concept of using an app as a delivery system. Do you have an idea of kind of what came first? Did you have an idea for an app-based film, or did you have the idea for this kind of Haunting Melissa story, and then the idea for implementation kind of came in afterwards?
I, neither of them. What came first was the desire to tell a story onto the iPad. So I got my, you know, I've always wanted to tell stories. For me, the cinema is the ultimate movie going experience, because you have a captured audience in a dark room, and the collective energy, the collective mind of an audience watching a film can affect how you enjoy that movie or move by that movie. If you're in a theater with one other person, if you're in a theater alone, it's different than if you're in a theater with, you know, 1,000 people. So that to me is like the ultimate experience. And it's also when you go to the movie theater, you know there's a beginning, middle, and end. You know you're going to be out of that movie theater in an hour and a half to 2 hours. You probably usually know the running time, especially if you're going to see Avatar, right? You know, right. You're in there for 3 hours.
Exactly.
But you know that when you leave, the movie's going to be over.
Right.
So it's such a different strategy, and to me it's the ultimate kind of experience. But I've always looked to tell stories in different ways, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but when I worked with David Lynch, we had launched DavidLynch.com, and we wanted to tell stories over the internet in the late 90s, and obviously the pipe wasn't capable of doing it then. I think
right. We
were way ahead of our time back then in terms of our concept. And so I've always had a look at technology and been interested in you know, when you're a creator, a film producer, a director, a writer, you're always wanting to get your story told. And usually it's by any means. And so when I first got my hands on the iPad, I thought, holy shit, this thing is like game over. You've got this device in your hand that is a unique viewing experience, but just on a basic level, it can deliver video, no doubt about it. It can deliver sound, no doubt about it. And it's a unique viewing experience because you're holding a device very close to your face. When you sit at home watch TV, you're a good distance from your TV. When you're in a movie theater, you're a good distance from the screen, usually. And so this was a new experience, but I felt like you could emotionally tell a story on this thing. And so I thought a ghost story would be a fantastic thing to deliver. How personable and contained that if you get someone to, you know, put their headphones on and sit in a dark room somewhere and watch this, you've got them. And so the idea just kind of swelled from when I bought my first iPad. I had no knowledge of the operating system or how to program for it or what that meant. I just kind of was inspired by this device and kind of this magic light going off in it. And I knew it was an opportunity to create, like what we talked about at the beginning. It's being inspired by technology not to sound like I'm carrying water for Apple or Steve Jobs, but it really is. You know, like an Apple ad, in the sense it's like these devices inspire you to create, and then they give you the ability to create, right? So
yeah.
It just was that moment, and I said, I have to do this. This is like, you know, this is a no-brainer. And I didn't know the minutiae or the details of how to make it happen in terms of building an app and could I do some of the things I wanted to do. But as I dove into it and educated myself, I realized that we could achieve, you know, almost everything that we wanted to do. And obviously none of it easy, but doable and available.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was curious about, you know, when you decided to, you know, when you got the story together, you knew you wanted to put it on iPads and iPhones, and you wanted to have an app and break things up into chapters. How was that different for you than doing just kind of a normal movie theater movie? You know, taking a story and choosing where to edit it, you know, how to break things up into chapters. Was that kind of a difficult process for you?
It's conceiving a story in a completely different way. I think it gives you the ability to expand the world and come from a place of like, hey, we're going to spin out a really big world and we're going to try to shoot as much footage as we can with time and money allotted, but that we can really take risks and do things like send you a chapter that's a minute and 30 seconds long, and look at a schedule that's really, you know, unique and broken up and inconsistent, and then beautifully have the ability to change that schedule at whim. We can change the schedule whenever we want. That was an awesome revelation that we, you know, I kind of thought might be possible, and then realized that, yes, indeed, you can completely manipulate the schedule. But in terms of story, you know, it's not vastly different than writing a script for film or television. You just have to think about how consistent you're being with moving your story along or giving people things that will want them to come back for more. So it's still, you know, I'm not a writer. I don't sit down and write a script, at least not yet. But story concept, yes. I work with a writer closely, and where we shape Tommy, Melissa, one. I worked with Andrew Clavin closely about how to shape it and how to make, you know, take risks or not fall into the trap of like, oh, it's 15 minutes every time you get a piece of story. It's 7 minutes and 23 seconds or some notion that like, oh, you can't serve video on the web or through an app because statistics show that people don't watch after 2 minutes and 23 seconds, yeah. All this kind of bullshit that no one knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like none of that factored into what we were doing. And that actually, you know, is just total horseshit to me, and it was really just again about serving the story and its journey and trying to make sure that we weren't hewed into some strict codified time allotment to push content or how long that piece of story was.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, the kind of release scheduling and it being so staggered, that's something I borrowed for this podcast. A lot of people have said, you know, when you do a podcast, you should always do it on a certain day, you know, that's more consistent and people like that. And I thought to myself, my audience doesn't really like that. They're used to this kind of a thing. This is kind of exciting to not know when you're going to get that next bit. I wanted to keep it very true to the Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's such a staggered world now. There's people are getting content from, we all know what's going on. We're kind of lab rats, I think, in this internet, you know, pipe connected world. No one knows what's going to work tomorrow or what isn't going to work. And there's no hard and fast rules. Oh, everybody wants to binge watch and that's all they want. Well, that's bullshit. You know, it's like people just want good content. And they'll find it eventually, and they'll watch it in any fashion they want to. And if you try to, you know, you got to commit to what your idea is and serve. You know, we committed to the idea of a disjointed schedule, and pieces come to you sporadically, and we committed to it, and people have seemingly enjoyed it. So I think if you're trying to chase what the norm is, you're just chasing the norm, and there's not a lot of excitement in that.
Absolutely not. I mean, that's... This, you know, the staggered schedule is one of the things that I've gotten a lot of people to get into Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts when I bring up that fact that and the push notifications and the fact that in the middle of the night it's going to freak you out. You'll be freaked out for a second, but then you'll remember, oh, that means I have a new chapter, and you'll get excited and you'll grab your phone and start watching. Cool. You were talking about, running times for, you know, going into a movie theater, knowing how long it's going to be versus having this staggered schedule and having these apps that you don't know exactly beginning or end. And I mean, this, doing the movie this way keeps the, from what I can tell, the viewer engaged for weeks and months after you've even gotten the last chapter. Every time I have dinner with somebody, eventually the conversation is going to go towards Dark Hearts and Haunting Melissa, and I'm going to talk their ear off about how great it is.
That's awesome. I hope you're dining out on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. Anytime I can go out and talk to somebody about it, anytime someone pulls out an iPhone or an iPad, I always ask them, like, have you heard about Haunting Melissa? You should really check it out. And I explain to them, you know, a lot of the elements that are built into it and the fact that sometimes things change. And they have this kind of puzzled look on their face, like they, you know, they've never heard of something like this. And I've gotten quite a few people pretty addicted to it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
I love it.
We're constantly on, you know, on Twitter, going through screenshots, looking for things. It's great that there's actually something to look for. And you know, Nambo Parfo on Twitter, you know, he made that model of the robot from the movie.
That's awesome.
I was
so good. It's so well done. It's so well done too. Great. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
We've got the real guy here in the office. We've got both of them actually. The real guy and the not to spoil it if anyone hasn't watched, but we also have the deprecated version as well here in the office near our conference table.
Nice.
yeah.
I'm very curious about stuff. What happened in that shed with that one. Very strange.
Yeah.
Well, since you mentioned The Office, one personal question I had, personal to me as far, anybody around The Office use the term Fedora the Explorer? Anyone said that?
We use them all. We think it's hilarious. You know, we mock each other with the names. It's great. You know, it's fun to see how those things get interpreted out. And yeah, Fedora the Explorer has been used for sure. You know, all the wardrobe is up in Canada in a storage facility. I wish we had the Fedora Explorer's hat here, because then we could take photos and post it onto Twitter.
Oh yeah,
that would be good. But his wardrobe is tucked away in a safe place.
I also had a question. It's very particular to Dark Hearts, and it's not any kind of a spoiler or anything. It was just something I noticed, and I wondered if you gave the direction to do it, or it's just something that that Cassia decided, or that it just happened by chance with editing. That there's in chapter 18, Melissa kind of surprises Mrs. Caraway, and she's talking to her on the street and kind of berating her, and she's really upset. And she doesn't blink for the entire scene. Is that deliberate, or is that that's just how it happened?
No, I think that it wasn't specific direction. It's definitely a product of the edit. You're looking at a scene that's cut together from probably six or seven different setups in both directions. I know that the camera pointing back towards Cassia, we used probably, say we did five or six takes in that direction, we probably used three or four of those takes to make the scene work. So, I wish it was more interesting than that, but it is. It's a product of the edit for sure. But I didn't know that you didn't blink, and that's interesting, because usually my editor and I will look for places to cut around a blink. So Micah, who's my editor, would probably know that she didn't blink one time.
To me, it definitely made her seem even more upset and disturbed by what was going on. And like, I was just focused on it. I'm just staring and I'm trying not to blink so I don't miss her blinking. So it really worked as maybe an unintentional device of kind of heightening the stakes in that scene.
What we were certainly trying to achieve is that emotion. So, you know, her not blinking is a byproduct of that, but certainly trying to heighten the stakes and put her in that space is what motivated the selects that we used.
Oh, that's a happy mistake, or who knows? But in filming, you're talking about that for the dynamic story elements. I was very curious how you chose when to have those and when not. Was it something that was kind of decided for this scene, we're going to do this one, or did you kind of look at where you're going to be filming and kind of decide if there's a good place to put one in or not?
They're scripted by design. There are some instances where I kind of added them in the moment, but for the most part, they're scripted by design, and there's a purpose, hopefully, behind them. That obviously always has to do with the supernatural or you know, the other world puncturing through, or an implication of what we're watching. Is it real, or is it an alternate world, or the dynamic story elements the real world, and what we're watching is the alternate world? You know, there's kind of that notion at play, and concepted throughout. I think the dynamic story elements are, they're a work in progress, and that I think the concept What can be done with them? We haven't even scratched the surface. I feel like it's still a major missed opportunity for really exploring how to really change storytelling and be able to hopefully if we shoot another Haunting Melissa, there's no design at this moment to do it. But if we were to really explore deeper story, more going back to one or two and burrowing down and just, you know, for instance, Melissa, chapter one, Haunting Melissa one, you know, goes up and investigates, her and Holly investigate the weird noises in the adjacent room. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, you cut to, she's sleeping in her room. What happens if you shot a scene of her alone in the house after Holly leaves, and she goes into upstairs and there's a trap door, you know, inside her closet that goes into a hidden room, and you film that sequence and you cut that sequence. I mean, you can start creating this organic story world. The challenge is obviously having the time to do that.
Yeah,
that stuff. It's a lot
more filming.
You know, in a perfect world, this model is a constantly moving model, meaning you're always filming. It's almost like a TV model where you're shooting 24/7, 365. So you have content that you can always push out. That would be the ideal circumstance, and I think under those kind of parameters, you'd have the ability to really mine DSEs. Which would be, I think, absurdly fantastic fun.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, this is the infancy of this concept, and I'm really hopeful for the future of kind of the way this whole thing will work. Because, yeah, you know, once more and more people know about it and more brains get involved and ideas start flowing, it's going to get really, really interesting.
I hope it continues to have legs, and that other filmmakers get involved, and you know, can only imagine what would happen if somebody like Peter Jackson or Guillermo del Toro or J.J. Abrams, and just to name the obvious choices, dove into this space. It's a new way to tell stories. It's familiar to us, which is a good thing, but it's also got layers of unfamiliarity, and to be able to really dive deep into these things like dynamic story elements. It's just a ton of fun, and I hope it happens.
I feel confident it will. I really do, because it's amazing from when I first got it and first started watching it. And it's just, this is what I've been waiting for. This is what I've been looking for. This is really the way things should go. You know, I don't want to just walk out of a movie theater and then maybe talk to my friend about it, you know, for a little bit afterwards. And then it's just, I might watch it again when it comes out on DVD or download it on iTunes. But, you know, this very organic movie that is very engaging, and there's things to look for and there's people to talk to about it. I mean, that's, the social networking is a very big thing, obviously. And yeah, you know, having a piece of entertainment that allows you to bring social networking into it, definitely the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also seeing people come together that haven't met each other before and build relationships and friendships around it is special, and I think fun, and something we've certainly enjoyed watching happen. And we obviously consider you all part of the family. You know, it's also informative too, to know what works or doesn't work and get honesty back from people like yourself about how we can improve things and make things better. What did we miss? You know, what should we focus on? It's rare that you're able to kind of engage like that almost in real time to make things better.
I was going to ask you, can you think of any specific things that maybe you guys have implemented or at least learned from reading feedback on the discussion boards and on Twitter and Facebook? Anything that really stuck out as, well, that's a brilliant idea, that's how we should do XYZ?
I think the biggest change, well, the model of going from a download model to a streaming model was always, from the beginning of HM1, a kind of internal debate and something that was difficult to kind of come to a really definitive, you know, kind of confident, like, well, okay, we're going to download model for HM1 and we're really sticking to it. There was always a seed of doubt that that was the right thing to do, and so we somewhat listened to, we always had doubts about it being the wisest way, but heard a little bit about it and what the issues were, so we decided to go to a streaming model for Dark Hearts. I think that the streaming model has its own challenges. It's still kind of like I vacillate between the two. I mean, ultimately, I'd like to use a download model where, you know, the files are small and high quality, but that's a compression battle issue that hopefully the HBO show Silicon Valley resolves. I don't know if you've watched that show, but that's kind of like the crux of the show. It's hilarious. But at any rate, that was something like I think is a big ticket issue. You know, going to the streaming model, not clogging people's devices up with gigabytes of content. And we listened, you know, I think we're always challenged by the messaging. You know, we were always challenged by, are we messaging people properly? Do they understand what the experience is? Do they understand how to use settings or auto-archiving in HM1 of footage or turning on push notifications? I mean, these things that you think are really simple, they're always not. You know, your audience and your users are very smart, but you can be in a cocoon as a developer because you know what you're building and the people around you know what you're building, and what seems obvious to you really may not be. So we've listened and made tweaks, and hopefully things have gotten better. I think on this, I don't know that there were many changes from HM1 or things in the script or story that we built upon from listening to people's reactions. Because we kind of, Andrew Clayton and myself, always had a notion of kind of where we wanted the story to go before we had even completed HM1.
Sure. Yeah. And that, I think from an industry standpoint, that's one of the biggest values that Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts has made very clear, that you're able to get feedback real time, you know, immediately from the people that are watching your film and really get an idea of what's going on, versus, you know, making a film, maybe doing a focus group and then putting it out in the theaters and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
It's very useful, yeah, to get a
doctor. Yeah, you know, it's got to be careful too, because you're not hearing from everybody. There's a lot of people that may love it or dislike it, and you never hear from them, so you can't fall in love with all the positive stuff. You know, you got to listen to the negative stuff even more closely. But yeah, to see the reaction and pretty much real time, it's pretty cool, and we think super informative.
So, into the filming and being on location up in Calgary, was it creepy at all being in some of those places? I mean, you know, you're there filming the story that's been written, and you've got your equipment and cameras and stuff. But places like the Maynard House are very strange. Did that have a weird vibe?
Yeah, you know, there's places like the Maynard. Yes and no. I think in scouting some of these places I'd been to before I was filming, it's much creepier to go alone into like the Strogue House and the Maynard House for sure. There were some murders in that house in the early 80s. And when I first ever went into that house, I went with a buddy of mine who told me about it. It's pretty, it's really hard to find. It's like off a two-lane highway and down a dirt road and down another dirt road and down another dirt road. And there's this shack, and it's like hidden behind a lot of growth, and there's cows around, and you go in there the first time I ever went in, and there's still police tape there, and the house is just a rotting husk. And these two farmhands that lived there, that I guess murdered a couple women, their clothes are still hanging in the cabinets. I mean, there's a very yucky vibe in that place. It's since been torn down, actually. I think it was torn down this June after we were filming. They burned it or tore it down. So that place, filming there, it's, you know, there's a lot of crew around. You know, I think on Dark Hearts, I think maybe we had a crew of maybe at some points 60, 70 people. Oh. So not all at that location, but at the Stroke House for sure. The Stroke House I've been there alone. It can be pretty creepy, but it's got a pretty good energy. It's a beautiful property, you know, surrounded by beauty. Alberta is an absolutely stunning place. There's a sadness there too, because mm-hmm. people lived there. There was a family there, generations of a family, and they kind of left in the early 90s, and it's still taken care of and maintained, but no one lives there anymore. So there's kind of these artifacts around from this, you know, a family, but I don't know how creepy that place is. I think if you're there alone at night, yes, but I never really, the Maynard House had more of a spooky energy to it than I would say for sure the Stroke House. Although there, I think some of the cast was freaked out when we were filming, and I know in Haunting Melissa 1, when we shot Holly and Melissa approaching the guest room where you heard the crying, when I rehearsed, the actresses, there was no sound, but when I did the first take, I played that crying sound, and I know that those actresses were properly spooked out of their mind, because it was such a distinctly disturbing crying. And I had it on set, which was nice that I had that sound asset. But for me, I don't think overall there's just this yucky, dreadful feeling being in any of those environments. But the Maynard House, if you're there alone, it does have that feeling.
I think you guys really did a great job at giving those places, in the case of the Maynard House, an additional level of creepy, and then the Stroke House just making what looks like a really nice farmhouse really dark kind of feel. That crying sound, that is my least favorite sound in the world. It freaks me out every time I hear it, and when it came back in Dark Hearts, I was like freaking out, because it gets me in the wrong way. So strange.
Yeah, well, it is a really weird, yucky sound, and I love it. Even though you don't, I do love it.
I love it because I hate it.
Exactly.
It's so effective. As soon as I heard it start, it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Kind of you feel really fortunate when you're, you know, digging for sounds or creating sounds, and you could find that noise, because it just strikes that nerve of what the hell is this? And I never want to hear that in the real world.
Oh yeah, if that came out of a closed door in my house, I'd move. Second.
Yeah.
And in the door.
Oh. Yeah.
Crazy. So yeah, on sound, with, you know, not having a score in the first Haunting Melissa, which, I mean, as found footage movies go, you don't really expect there to be much of a score, because why would there be? But how was it doing, being involved with the score for Dark Hearts? Like, what did that process look like?
Well, that's a great question. And Martin Tilden, he's a friend of mine as a composer, he's just an exquisitely talented guy, and he's a world-renowned cellist. And I had worked with Martin on the Ring movies. He was a composer on Ring 1 and the sequel. He's just an incredibly gifted musician. Sits down with a cello and can create sounds and music and score that'll just bring you to your knees in tears, and is able to obviously write beautiful music as well. So he was the first and only choice. I wanted to immediately go to him when I knew I was filming and hire him, and he wanted to do it. And so we you know, we had a lot of discussions about emotion and environments and trying to find this kind of the inner soul of the movie. And, you know, he read the script and we talked about the script and really, again, built kind of the sound, and he created the sound and the score out of the sadness of the character and the environments. And, you know, he came up with a theme for characters and a main theme for the story and a theme for the house. And it just kind of magically, you know, he creates magic. It just was a beautiful, beautiful thing to hear what he created. And then going through and spotting, you know, spotting a movie is always fun and difficult. And you know, sometimes, as you know, no score is as powerful as having score. So, you know, we did that delicate dance of placing the music in the right place, which is always a challenge. And you kind of always get it right, but there's always, you know, you can always do a better job. It's never done. But it's kind of a process of design and a process of magic, creative magic, where someone like him is able to create where this inspiration comes from and how these sounds are created. Who knows? But, you know, it's all Martin Tillman. And, you know, he worked with Jörg Huttner as well, who was involved in creating some soundscapes. And, you know, the two of them did a brilliant job. And I wish there was more score. I think it's balanced properly, but I wish there was more, because the pieces are, I think you get a good dose of it if you make it to the credits. But you know, we may release the soundtrack on iTunes. It's been discussed. It's just something we have to get around to. But the music is fantastic, and I think in many ways just like so powerful.
Oh yeah,
and takes picture and turns it into so much more.
Yeah, I mean, it really hit the nail on the head with the score, especially a lot of those big sweeping like helicopter shots over landscapes and stuff like that. And just going from Haunting Melissa, and then Dark Hearts comes out, and you download it, and the first time you hear some of that score, it really pulls you into this new experience. It's fantastic, and I certainly would pay for the soundtrack if that were to come out.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear that it worked that way too, because I think we discussed that a lot, which is you're going from a story that had no score, and then you're starting a story that does have score, and what's the impact of that? It's going to be positive that there's a score that fits this type of film-like story, but, you know, when do you hit it and how much? And, you know, we were really excited because we knew we had something special with the score, I think it's there. It just elevates picture.
And I mentioned on Twitter that I watch Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts as much with my eyes as I do with my ears, and sometimes we'll listen to a chapter with just my eyes closed because there's so much depth in there without even needing to see anything. Whether it's the score or just weird sounds you hear, or just picturing the chapter you've already seen in your head while you're just listening to it. There's so many different ways that this two apps have gotten me and a lot of other people very, very much engaged with the story. So clearly a very effective tool for storytelling.
Yeah, it's sound is a special thing, and you know, Scotty Kramer is my sound designer, and he worked on Haunting Melissa 1 and obviously Dark Hearts, and we have a lot of fun creating sounds and placing sounds and spend a lot of time with it, a lot of special attention, because it just adds so much. It adds so much, and we wanted to create unique sounds, unique environments around those sounds, elevate places. And I think I'm really happy with where the soundscape is. And again, where the score is, I think it really has high marks for that, high marks in my mind.
I would definitely agree. And even the new menu system in Dark Hearts versus Haunting Melissa, the sounds that are in there, there's... Am I wrong in thinking that some of the messages and phrases you hear have changed over time in the menu for Dark Hearts?
No, things have changed. Things have changed for sure. You know, we try to, when we update the app, we try to always tweak and improve or expand upon the soundscape. Inside the nav for sure.
Yeah, and there's so many areas in these apps where if you make adjustments to it, fun to go through and listen to all the sounds in the menu and then go through each chapter and try to see what's different and then start second guessing yourself. Like, did I hear that before? Is that different? Did I see that? You know, I've gone back to Haunting Melissa 1 and you guys have refreshed a lot of stuff in there. Starts to make me question whether things happened before, or you never know. Very brilliant.
Yeah, and sound is always much harder to pin down for consistency than picture, right? So it's another fun potential DSE layer to play with. And we're always looking at these areas to kind of, you know, make it better, fix things that we didn't quite get right, or just change them to mess with people. Because we want to mess with you guys.
Well, we welcome that. We enjoy being messed with.
Yeah,
because it's just I'll be just about to tap on the chapter portal, and then I'll hear some voice say something I never heard before, and kind of startles you. And it's just sound, but it's just as effective as the video.
Cool.
Well,
to know that you're listening with such keen ears.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes a DSE might come up. And it's preceded by a little bit of a tweak in the sound. So your ears are just really working the whole time. Being a musician and wanting to be a sound designer and be involved in that kind of stuff, like, it really captures my interest. Like, I can really see like a lot of thought and a lot of effort has been put into it.
Well, thanks. There has been, and the team of guys I work with, they do great work, and they take pride in what they're doing, and it's not easy work, but it's fun to do.
It really sounds like you've got a great team of people at Hook Digital Media, and the cast as well. I mean, I think the casting, all the decisions that have been made, it's just it's my favorite movie. I'll say that.
Cool. Really, well, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, you know, it's you go in with the best of intents and you get lucky a lot of times and you thread the needle and sometimes you don't, but you gotta, you know, you have to keep this kind of ideal in your mind, and you know, when you make a movie, there's this magic that has to occur to bring it all together. And I feel like, just the cast alone, I've been very fortunate to pull together such a great, dedicated group of people who are really passionate about acting and total professionals and bought into the concept and the characters from day one. And I think it shows through both apps.
It really does. And it really means something to me to try to support and help someone's creative vision. Cause it is very inspiring to see, like, you know, listen to the interview you did with Meet the Developer with Apple, you know, someone having an idea and then getting it done. And I really wanted to support that. And so I'm glad that I was able to do the things that I've been doing so far to help you and everybody else there out.
Well, that's what it's all about, right? We live in this era now where there's not, if you're an artist, there's not a lot of excuses not to create something.
Oh yeah.
And it's hard to come up with a great idea, and it's always hard to follow through on it, because I think by nature, we're lazy. And you know what I mean? And I've always got that voice in my mind, like, I have to create, I've got to make something, I've got to be in process. And making movies is a very intoxicating, super fun journey. You work with fantastically creative people, you make a lot of friends, and you end up with this end product that can hopefully live for a long time. And sometimes it's shitty, and sometimes it's okay, and sometimes it's great. But you know, the journey of making it is so much fun, and I think it becomes intoxicating, and you want to keep doing that. So for me, it's you know, been an awesome few years, because I've been able to be on this journey of, you know, directing and producing and working with a lot of the same people who I just adore, and we have so much fun doing it. And it's really, in a way, this kind of pure independent filmmaking, because there's not a lot of people telling us what we can and cannot do. There's actually nobody. We just go out and do it and create it and get it right to the audience. You know, there's no MPAA, there's no studio, there's no TV network. And it gives us a chance to, you know, especially me, you know, put my money where my mouth is. It's like, can you tell a story? Can you make it work? There's no one there to change anything. It all kind of rides on my shoulders. You know, I mean, I don't do it all. I've got a ton of creative people helping me, but like the core idea, you know, you got to live and die with it. And to be able to have that opportunity to come up with an idea and then actually do it and see if it works, it's a test of what you think you're capable of, and that can be scary, but it's super fun. And you know, just going back to that thing where I first ever held the iPad, it was just like, oh, well, there's no excuse. I can actually make something now and get it to an audience. So do it, or you're, you know, missing an opportunity. And that's the voice that was in my head and carried me through to the end. Because again, I think inherently you're gonna wander. At least I will. And I need, you know, that spark to kick me in the butt to do it.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you listened to that little voice and kept going and got so much of this done. And that's, you know, that drive to feel like you need to create. I mean, that's why I splintered off from Twitter to make the Tumblr, to make the podcast, and just trying to hit it from every different angle that I can, and really feeding that creative thing. So I thank you, and I'm sure that we all thank you for you and everybody at Hook Digital Media, everything that you guys have done.
Well, thank you, and we thank the fans. And you know what you're doing is as much a part of what we created. It is part of it all. It's all part of that ecosystem, and it's just the beginning, because we're going to keep creating stuff, I hope. You know, I want to expand this world. I want to tell more stories. There's going to be a lot more coming on all fronts, I hope, knock on wood. And you know, you all be the first to know, and we're thinking about you guys on a regular basis, and we're gonna continue to support the podcast and the other stuff that you're doing. So, too much fun.
Yes,
thank you. Let me know when I can come back.
Oh yeah, you have an open invitation. So
I love it.
Go ahead.
I love it. Let's do it again.
Please, that would be fantastic. So I really look forward to having you on again, and maybe some other folks around there will get involved as well. I want to thank you for being on.
They will. Here. We'll be bringing some surprise guests your way. So
brilliant.
You and I know who they may be, but we'll keep others wanting for more.
Yes, it's all about. Well, thank you very much for being so accessible and deciding to come be on my podcast. Just for everyone out there listening, you can follow everything that's going on with Haunting Melissa at Haunting Melissa on Twitter, and you can follow me at A Public Witness on Twitter. Also, you can follow at A Dark Companion on Twitter now, as well as Instagram. Cool. You can listen to the podcast on Podomatic.com or directly through iTunes. At darkcompanion.com, there is a subscription button there that'll take you directly to iTunes, as well as a PayPal donation button if you feel so inclined. But it is certainly not necessary. So, Neil, any final words for the fans out there?
Well, hopefully no words are final, but just, yeah, thank you, everybody, for downloading both apps, going on the journey, sticking with us, interpreting things that may or may not be there. Just it's been really kind of the highlight of my creative career, and I just can't thank everybody enough, and I hope I can bring more in the future and just be vocal and aggressive about how much you love the apps and get other people to download them. It all adds up in the long run to more content. So just a big thank you. And I hope to meet everybody in person and continue the conversation online.
Excellent. Well, Neil, once again, thank you very much for joining me today.
Awesome. Thank you. Talk to you soon, brother.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.